News managers talk a lot about how to recruit and retain more racial diversity in their newsrooms, but what about gender diversity? And although there are more women reporters now than in the past, there's still disparity in not only the number, but the jobs available for women in news media. For columnists, it's an even smaller pool that women are allowed into. How has that changed, and how does it change the national conversation to have women report or opine on politics, sports, or the economy? Three Alaska columnists join us today for Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
Boating accidents happen, even to experienced boaters and on calm, sunny days. This boating season, make those you care about promise to be rescue ready by always wearing a life jacket when in an open boat or on deck, attaching the engine cutoff device when underway, and carrying emergency communication and distress signaling devices on their person. Visit pledgetolive.org for more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. Today we're talking about women columnists. Humorists like Irma Bombeck found an audience among working moms, and Heloise tried to alleviate household stress with tips on how to shine your silver or get grape juice out of the sofa. Dear Abby helped you figure out how to deal with rude relatives, and Miss Manners made sure you used the right fork. The women who join us today represent a departure from the days when women were more likely to land a job in a newsroom if they knew how to make great coffee rather than write great copy. Our astute guests have written about a wide range of issues. We're talking about the changing role of women in news and commentary. In the studio is Jill Burke. Jill is on hiatus right now from her Alaska Dispatch column. But she has been a reporter in Alaska for many years for both print and broadcast and is now a columnist who writes about a wide range of things. Welcome, Jill.
Thank you, Lori.
Thanks so much for being here. Elise Putkatuk spent 28 years in Barrow, which is awesome, and has worked, not Barrow, Utqiagvik. Yes. Has worked in radio and print. She's also an Alaska Dispatch columnist and is the author of two books, Parallel Logic, about her years in Utqiagvik, Barrow, and Coming into the City, which I love this title, Coming into the City, about moving to Anchorage. Hello, Elise.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for being here. And on the phone with us from Unalakleet is Lorelei Ivanoff. Lorelei is the former news director for station KNOM in Nome, and is currently a columnist for The Dispatch, writing about the joys of life off the road system. Thanks for being on with us, Lorelei. Lorelei?
Good morning.
She's a long ways away.
Good morning. Thank you.
Thanks for being on. You out there, Alaskans, can also join us. Do you have questions or comments about women in reporting and commentary? Do you have comments about some of the work of the columnists that we have in the studio today, or ideas maybe that you'd like to share about future columns for them? You can give us a call, 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. If you're calling in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422, or you can email us talk@alaskapublic.org. I kind of want to start with having each of you tell me what first attracted you to reporting, if you were working as a reporter. At least we were talking before the show that you weren't a reporter, but you did do broadcast time. You did time in broadcast. We've all done some time in broadcast.
Sounds like a jail sentence.
and how you decided to make the transition to column writing. So, Elise, I wanted to start with you. You've been doing this longer than our other guests. How did it all start for you?
Oh, and I feel ancient immediately.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I shouldn't have
framed it like that.
I am. Actually, I got my start through Jackie Lindauer, a name that might ring a bell with many older, like me, Alaskans. I was the rec director for the then city of Barrow, now Utqiagvik. And Jackie was starting a paper called the Barrow Sun. It was the first regular paper that would be in Bush Villages, and she got in touch with me and said, we're looking for any kind of news possible. We just need to fill this paper. And I sent her a column, I sent her a piece. I didn't think of it as a column at the time, about a dog show we held in Barrow, possibly the first and last dog show ever held in Barrow, in which we had, we were trying to encourage people to come in and get their dogs spayed, neutered, vaccinated, that type of thing. So we had prizes for like the dog that looked most like another animal. My dog won for looking most like a beached seal. They had an ugliest dog winner. I mean, there was just all kind of crazy categories. And I wrote about it. And Jackie wrote back and said, wow, do you realize that you have some talent in this area? And I was like, well, yeah, I mean, I've always been told I could write, but I've never known, you know, mostly I write grants. And that's pretty much how it started. She gave me my start. I sent pieces into the Barrow Sun. And then one day, with an amount of courage I never knew I possessed, I handwrote something and sent it to Howard Weaver, who was then in the Anchorage, what was then the Anchorage Daily News. And much to my absolute, I was just flabbergasted. He not only wrote back, but he said, wow, I like what you write. Send me some stuff. And that's how I got started. It took a while. For the longest time, I was one of, I think, many columnists in the state who would send stuff in regularly. And you know, you'd open the paper and pray, maybe this, you know, maybe this week, maybe today they ran something, a piece for me. I did not become a regular contributor until I went to what was then the Voice of the Times. And that's when I started actually a weekly column and then transitioned to, what's it called now, the Alaska Dispatch News.
When was the Barrow Sun being printed?
Well, my first column, and I know this because a friend of mine framed it for me, was 1989, and that would have been in the Anchorage Daily News. So probably the first piece in the Barrow Sun was in the mid-80s, because that's when I was the city rec director.
All right. Thanks so much for that little historical moment. Lorelei, how about you? What attracted you to journalism, and where did you get started? Was it at KNOM?
Yeah, so my journalism career, I guess, did start at KNOM in Nome, in radio, and I absolutely loved it. I started there as a public affairs director doing feature pieces for then news director Paul Korchin. And I also had a 2-hour on-air time where I was a DJ for a few hours, and it was really lovely. Yeah, that's where I started. And I guess what got me into reporting itself was I once saw a simple job description for a reporter, and I realized that was something I could see myself doing every single day, just being a really curious person and just the idea of being able to call anyone I wanted to and find out what was going on was really appealing to me, and also just seeking truth was also something really appealing. So so I started at KNOM, and then quickly, like a year after, being the public affairs reporter and DJ, I moved over to the news director position and was there for 4 years covering the Iditarod, covering the Renda, made its visit to Nome, and yeah, enjoyed that very much. And of course, there's life changes, and I suddenly found myself needing to change some things. And so I made a switch in my career, and I could not leave Alaska journalism. I just could not leave it. There was just a huge part of me that needed to be plugged in and involved and participating. And so I had a few stories in, you know, on my computer. And I had written, you know, just kind of memoir-type stories. And I thought, you know, this might be good. Like, I think other Alaskans might be interested in this. I'm not sure. There were stories about cutting fish with my mom and things like that, like totally mundane rural Alaska things for people who live in rural Alaska. But I didn't really think, like, any of it was really, truly remarkable, but I sent it in to Alaska Dispatch thinking, no, maybe they'll print it. Turns out they did. I sent in another thing, another written piece, and they printed that again. And eventually it became this relationship where, yeah, I just I just found out that I had a voice, kind of, and a perspective and a way of living in rural Alaska that was, I don't want to say unique. I think that that word isn't accurate. But I think our perspective isn't shared as much as it could be out here. So, yeah, that's how I transitioned into being a columnist.
All right. Thank you. So if you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and we are talking today about women and the changing roles in news and in commentary, column writing, and how that impacts both local, regional, state, and national dialogues about a wide range of issues. Jill Burke, tell us about your journey into your first newsroom and then how you made that transition from being a reporter to being a columnist.
So I have, excuse me, I'm going to apologize in advance. My voice is a little bit gravelly thanks to the birch pollen, go allergies. I had always known that I wanted to be a journalist and a writer and a storyteller from the time I was a tiny little kid. And so, you know, between then and a lot of life experience, I got to the point where I was ready to move to Alaska and had studied journalism in college and wanted to find a journalism job. Did not find any ready openings, but did find an opening for a copywriter position in the news promotion department at what was then KTVA under different ownership than they have now. And applied for the job, got the job. My cover letter basically said, I don't have any of the qualifications that you're looking for, but I'd be great, and here's why. And I was shocked and just pleased that I made it through because it covered some moving expenses, which was important at the time. You know, I was broke and did well in that department, but really felt misplaced and felt like I was not where I should be and that I really belonged and wanted to be in the newsroom as a news writer and producer and reporter. And few people there knew my background other than being in promotions. And when an opportunity arose for an open position, I applied for it, and the news director was supportive, and I had a little bit of support. Got that job and then endured, it had to be 6 months of horrible hazing from hard and fast news reporters and journalists who thought that it was just, excuse me, they were aghast that someone who came out of a promotions department was being allowed to produce news.
Oh.
So I had to prove myself and kind of, you know, cut my teeth on a lot of lack of support, for a better term. But I did well, and I was fortunate that I had people who helped me along the way. And from there, I moved on to KTUU, and from there, I moved on to Alaska Dispatch when it was still a small website, and then you know, joined the collective staff when the Anchorage Daily News and the Alaska Dispatch News merged. And I have always been kind of a, I don't know how others perceive me, but I've perceived myself as being kind of a harder-edged general assignment reporter and somebody who really likes kind of the longer get, the longer story, the more detailed investigative pieces. But I got to a point in life after life changes, you know, marriage, children, a bunch of, you know, other things under the bridge, and I just felt like I wanted to try something new. So I asked about switching to column writing, and I'm fortunate that my organization allowed me to make that switch. I don't know if you want to talk about this right now, but it was interesting at the time when I asked about it, because there were some conversations about, well, what are you thinking about? Like, are you wanting to be a mommy blogger, or are you...
As if that was the only choice that you had?
I could not believe that somebody asked me that question. And I thought, what, are you crazy? Like, have you seen my history of work as a journalist in the state? Why would you think that I would want to be a mommy blogger? And then the second question was, well, are you just going to write, like, your opinion, or are you going to actually research and bring some facts and other things into your writing? And both of those things offended me and maybe they shouldn't have, and they probably were legitimate questions for someone who's trying to evaluate why would a regular reporter want to switch over to column writing, and who is this columnist, and what is their voice going to be? And I still hadn't really flexed that muscle, and I was still searching for the voice and what I wanted to do, but I knew that I wanted to be unrestrained in the sense that I wanted to be able to explore a wide variety of topics, whether they were political or personal or family-based or what have you. And getting back to the mommy blogger remark, you know, I don't think that the stakes get any higher than how families live and exist and in a community and a society and pretty much any aspect of traditionally harder news life that we would address as political reporters or financial reporters or economic reporters are going to grind up against what families are experiencing. And so I did not see those two things at odds, other than if someone were going to, you know, hem you in that way. Yeah. That did not happen to me, but it was an awkward transition. And I think it was an awkward transition both for myself as a writer trying to find a new voice and for editors trying to decide how are we going to edit this voice. And so, but anyway, long story short, that's how I transitioned to column writing.
And I want to drill down on that a little bit, but I want to also let people know they can call in if they have questions or comments or ideas. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide, 1-800-478-TALK. Or if you're calling in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can email us at talk@alaskapublic.org. I was talking to some of the younger people in our newsroom here, and of course, few people that are younger than me remember names like Irma Bombeck or, you know, some of the Heloise hints from Heloise. I remember those from being a kid. Of course, Dear Abby, a lot of people still know that column. Miss Manners. All of these columnists were writing primarily either humor or about household helpful tips or, you know, manners and how to interact with neighbors and relatives. But yeah, there has been a lot of change in that regard, although probably not as quickly as it should have been or as much as it should be. When you think about making that transition, as you were just talking, Jill, from straight-up reporting, where you work to keep yourself and your opinion out of the story, to column writing, where it's really all about you, your ideas, your opinion, your critique, how much time did that take? How difficult was that? And then, Lorelei, I'd like you to weigh in on that as well. But, Jill, what did that take?
Well, I think I'm still figuring that out, if I'm being brutally honest. But I took a course specifically designed on helping columnists find their voice and helping columnists work with their editors to ensure that, you know, one, that the voice still comes through, right? Because that's kind of your identity as a columnist. That's your brand, your voice. What is it? Your analysis, your word choices, everything, the topics you cover. And I, you know, some of my pieces were highly personal about my personal life and my family, and those were difficult pieces to write, but I braved my way into them because I felt that they were important, because I felt like the backdrop to them were significant political issues or issues that were difficult to talk about in the state. And a case in point would be a white mother raising Alaska Native children. And some of the implications of that. And, you know, others of them have just been great profiles about really remarkable individuals in the community that I have learned to appreciate through the process of reporting on them the same way that you would report on a traditional maybe news story feature. So I'm still finding that voice, but I like what I'm really striving for is to have the flexibility and the range of voice and interest and ability to produce any one of those things along the spectrum that piques my interest or that I feel is pressing or of importance.
Mm-hmm. Lorelei, when you are thinking about that transition from your years as a news reporter and then news director at KNOM, making that transition, was it difficult? Because as we were just discussing, in reporting, you're trying to keep yourself out of the story. It's important to keep yourself out of the story as much as possible. But in column writing, opinion writing, it is all about you and your voice and how that's going to resonate with your audience. How was that transition for you, Lorelei? And do you feel like you're trying to be a voice for rural Alaska, Alaska Natives, or are you just focused on you?
Well, in talking about the transition first, I feel like my experience is kind of the opposite of Jill's. You know, I was a reporter, I was a news director, so we were reporting on everything in the Norton Sound area. And that was difficult for me, living here, you know, this being my community, this being my home region. We were reporting on deaths and tragedies that were happening to my family, to my friends. And so it was, for that reason, it was very difficult. And the community is so small. You know, if something was happening in Umalakleet, where I live, you know, I was living in Nome, if something happened here, and I had to call the city office, well, my dad was the city manager. So it was difficult for me to be a reporter. I loved it. I enjoyed it. It was very difficult. And I always felt like I wanted to go, I don't know, it's not deeper into the story, but I'm kind of, if you read any of my pieces, I'm kind of an emotional writer. It's just, like, I get down to the heart of things. So with every story, you know, whether we were covering, I don't know, whatever we were covering, I wanted to get down to the heart of, like, who people are, what they're doing, why they do it, and really, you know, share that. And I felt like there wasn't enough time as a news director to really do it very well, or to do it where I was happy, I guess. And so switching to the column, it was actually like, oh my gosh, like, I can actually get to the heart of things and get to, you know, what makes people really mad and what you know, get to share stories of why people live where they do and, like, what are the things that you love about your community and just things that, I don't know, I'm really passionate about it. I love sharing those stories. And so it was kind of refreshing for me to do, I think, where naturally my strengths are as a storyteller, as a writer. So it wasn't terribly difficult.
I think go ahead, Lorelei, maybe what you're describing, if I'm hearing correctly, is just this authenticity of experience that you have greater freedom as a column writer to get into and to express and convey without some of the other limitations that being a straight news reporter place on you.
Right. And, you know, Lori had asked, you know, do I see myself as a voice for Alaska Natives or rural Alaska? And, I mean, kind of, but that, you know, that's not what gets me to in front of my computer writing my words. Like, I guess I you know, I have written and saying, like, why can't the media portray the rural Alaska I know? And you know, saying, like, why are a bulk of the stories negative that I see about my community and about our community? And that really gets into my skin. I mean, it really makes me very angry some days. So I do feel like, okay, I have a job to share, like you said, Joe, you know, an authentic lifestyle. We live here because we love it. And I think a lot of people don't quite understand that. You know, whether you're white or Alaska Native or whatever you may be living in rural Alaska, typically the people who live here and stay here absolutely love living here. And just to share glimpses into why that is, I think, is important in today's world, where things seem so divided and the rural and urban, you know, that connection is very real. So I wouldn't say I'm a voice for Alaska Natives. I would not say that. But I do feel like, I don't know, I guess I'd have to think about that and think about how I would describe or define what I do.
Well, you can think about it some more, and we'll talk about it as we go through the program today. This is Talk of Alaska, and we are discussing women and changing roles in newsrooms and in column writing and commentary. Our guests are Elise Putkatuk, Jill Burke, and Lorelei Kanin is on the phone from Unalakleet. You can join us, too, at 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. I want to get Elise back in here in a second to talk about a transition from doing a volunteer radio show to column writing, but let's get Jim on the line for a moment. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. I want to recall my abiding image of Jill Burke, and that is when she was trying to direct questions to Joe Miller, and Joe's security goons, in the guise of protecting their candidate, were trying to, I don't know, remove the rabid journalists. And what I remember mostly is Jill assertively exclaiming, "Take your hands off of me." And that image of me has always remained. And but my question is this to you, Jill. What one or two pieces, if you can do that, are you most proud of, and as your kids become adults, you would want them to read? And are these, I'm hoping that these pieces would be available for me to read on some kind of link.
Wow. All right, Jim, thank you. Thank you for the comments and question.
I think the one I mentioned at the beginning, you know, it was a difficult two-part series for me to write, which was I'm white, my kids are Native, does it matter? And then the second piece was I'm white, it my kids are Native, it matters. And that it just explored a lot of interpersonal and I think also publicly political issues that matter both to my family and kind of the thoughtfulness and consideration that I try to bring both in just being a good parent and also kind of the complexities of identity in a modern world. And, I don't know. I'm kind of at a loss for a second piece. There was a piece I wrote about the first responders, medical first responders, kind of mid-level providers out of Savunga, who are like the last line between life and death. And I really enjoyed that piece because these are folks who are like Lorelei in small towns. They know the people who are coming through. They've got these incredible conditions in this tiny clinic where they have to make life and death decisions and, you know, race out to the tarmac to meet helicopters for medevacs. And I think that that just kind of shows the resilience and the innovativeness of folks from around the state. And then I have one unpublished piece that I wrote about a year ago, that at some point it, you know, relates again to my family, that I'm very proud of, but I just haven't decided what the best home for it is.
All right. Well, thank you, Jim, for the comments and the question. And we are going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll continue on with our conversation about women and their role in influencing thought and discussion as columnists on Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com. Alaska Pacific University delivers a distinctive educational adventure designed to support your personal and professional goals. Their online, evening, and campus-based courses make education accessible and will fit into any busy schedule. Be motivated by a devoted faculty and creative, independent-minded students. Apply now at alaskapacific.edu. Moving life ahead with APU. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We are discussing women and the changing roles in news and commentary. You can join our conversation at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK statewide. Or in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org, if you have thoughts about ideas for future columns for any of our guests today. We have Lorelei Ivanoff on the phone from Unalakleet. She's a former news director at KNOM in Nome and now writes a column for the Alaska Dispatch about her life in rural Alaska and what it means. Jill Burke is with us. She transitioned from news reporting in both broadcast and print to being a column writer and writes on a wide range of issues. And Elise Putkatuk is also with us. She spent nearly 30 years in Barrow, Utqiagvik, and now writes a column from her perch in Anchorage and also is involved in bird rescue, which is such an interesting thing. So, Elise, I hate to keep referring to you as like the elder stateswoman of what we're discussing.
That's nicer than calling me an old lady, so we'll take that.
But you have been doing this longer than our other guests. And so what was your experience in getting accepted as a woman who wanted to write a column? Was it in a time when there was just a hunger for more variety, and so maybe that helped pave the way a bit, or what were the resistance points?
Actually, going back to something Lorelei was saying, part of the reason that I think I got printed initially, at least in the old Anchorage Daily News, was because I was a voice from the bush. If you remember back in the 80s, No one was representing the bush from the bush. If there was news coming out, like the horrible time in the mid-80s in Barrow where we had the big scandal, there was a big embezzlement, we had reporters fly into town and in many ways violate the trust of a lot of people who had never dealt with reporters before, who didn't know if you left a piece of paper on your desk that had figures on it that the reporter, while they're talking to you, might be glancing over, and then they were going to see that in a piece. And so when I first sent my pieces into Howard Weaver, part of the reason that they were happily accepted, if that's a good phrase for it, was because I was an authentic voice from the bush, and I was speaking from a bush perspective, and that made a difference. When I first started, I have to say, again, I'm of the generation where Irma Bombeck was pretty much, and Miss Manners were my columnists. I mean, that's what I thought women wrote about. And so it was, for me, a very, very gradual transition. And it mostly happened after I left Barrow and I came to Anchorage. And I just felt that despite my years in the bush, despite the fact that I could still write with credibility about some issues in the bush, that now it was somebody else's turn to do that, who was still living out there. And that's when I made my transition into more of a political columnist. Probably the biggest transition moment, if you will, came when I wrote a column about domestic violence when I was still writing with a voice of the Times, and I spoke about the absence of male voices in this issue and where were the men while their women's daughters, sisters were being beaten up, and then the next day they were going hunting with the guy who beat them up as their hunting partner. Where were these voices? And that was the thing that caught the attention of people at the then Anchorage Daily News, and that's how I ended up transitioning over. So for me, that was the column that really gave me the okay to start talking about things that weren't humorous, that weren't kind of neutral. that were very more pointed and political and perhaps controversial.
Did your Howard Weaver or early editors, did they try to direct you in any certain way, like, well, can you write about great recipes? Or
I have to say, Michael Carey, Howard Weaver, and all my editors, even Paul, people find it hard to believe from the voice of the Times, Paul Jenkins, they never interfered. I have got to say, they never interfered with anything I sent in. They never told me, write in this direction, write in that direction. In 30 years of being a columnist, I can remember one column where I received feedback from the editor saying, this is extremely personal. We want you to think twice about whether you want to print this. And that, I would have to say, was the most, if you want to call it interference or guidance or suggestions, I ever had for my columns. I have been just very, very lucky with the editors that I've had.
That's fantastic to hear that there was so much support. 1-800-478-8255 is the number to call in if you have comments or questions or ideas for columns that you'd like to see written. 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, the number is 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us at talk@alaskapublic.org. Jill, how about for you? Have there been times when you really had to go nose to nose with another reporter or an editor or a public official who refused to take you seriously?
Yes. I mean, all the time, right? And I think that there is, I was thinking a lot about this before the show, where it is, I think, still challenging when we talk about being a female journalist or a female columnist to be assertive. And if you're assertive as a female, I think you are still considered as being kind of overly aggressive. And if the same behavior were to come from a male columnist or a male reporter, they're just being a good reporter. And I regret to say that I think that remains alive and well today to some degree, and it certainly was present in some of the newsrooms that I have worked in. I think some of it else is also just personality. You know, people have different approaches to how they talk with people and how they try to obtain information. I can remember, one press conference with then Governor Frank Murkowski, and he just refused to answer a question, and I kept re-asking it, and he just, kind of glossed over it, and that was frustrating. I mean, you do kind of have to advocate for yourself, and I always question, am I advocating legitimately and in the right vein, or am I the one who's off track and I'm just have blinders on and I'm not seeing that the person who's trying to communicate with me has some valid points? And I definitely have had some struggles with the writer and the editor process, and I've tried to get better with that as I've aged and, fight for the things that really matter. And, as one teacher recently explained to me, your goal is to get published, so work with your editors and work nicely. And editors have a really valuable role. They make sure that your material is readable, and they make sure that it's going to appeal, and they catch errors. And so I don't know if I answered your question. I feel like I got a little bit off track. But
well, I'd like to transition to, and Lorelei, let's start with you. Lorelei Ivanoff and Unalakleet, let's start with you with this next question about the response that you get to your columns, both good and bad. Do you, Lorelei, find that people, just generally, what kind of response do you get? And then do people have assumptions or biases that you see in how they respond to your columns based on the fact that you live in rural Alaska or that you're Alaska natives? Do you see a bias or kind of just a difference in the way that people respond to your columns as they do to others?
Yeah, well, I do get responses on the things that I write. And, at first when I was beginning writing this column, just sharing glimpses of life in rural Alaska, things were more lighthearted, and I would share, about me learning how to use a chainsaw personal things that were pretty darn lighthearted. And then I think just as my voice developed, I got a little more brave and was able to share about things that made me mad. And that's when, you know, the responses changed, of course, from, oh, that was a really nice piece, so thank you so much for sharing that, to people from outside of rural Alaska being a little aggressive and opinionated and sometimes nasty, when it's like, you know, I'm just sharing my life, like, This is just life in rural Alaska. This is my experience, and you can't take that away from me. So I guess, Lori, I've kind of learned that I write a piece, I write it authentically, I write about my experience generally. Sometimes I write about other people and share directly from their life and their story. And even then, I feel like, okay, this is genuine, this is real, this is true, this is my experience, and I release it, and whatever happens to it happens. It's kind of out of my control at that point. And so regarding biases, it's hard to say. I mean, I honestly try to stay away from reading comments, especially if I write something a little... you know, that would get some reaction, negative or positive.
So you just avoid reading them?
I don't always. Mm-hmm. I don't always have the best self-control when it comes to that. But I do typically try to avoid reading the comments there, that follow the story.
Well,
I try my best to do that.
How about Elise and Jill, when you have reaction to your columns, how do you, I mean, it's hard to let some of that roll off, but in some respects, if you can't, you're not going to survive into the future, Elise. So
yeah.
How have you dealt with it through the years?
I always say that some of my most loyal and faithful readers hate me so much they can barely keep the spit off the comments as they write them at the end of the column. And I always look at least initially to see what the comments are. And I can almost guarantee there's a couple people out there, who most of whom aren't using their real names, who just, no matter what I write, I could write that I, you know, kissed a baby today, and there would be four paragraphs of hate following that comment. What I have found is that probably about halfway through the comment section, it is no longer about anything you wrote. They are now arguing with each other, and so you just tune it out at that point. Does it affect me when they call my home and I get obscene phone calls at home? That doesn't thrill me. On the other hand, if, you know, you can't take it, you shouldn't be in the business. I mean, I'm putting myself out there every week. I'm expected to express an opinion, and I express my opinion. I don't expect everyone to agree. I wish some of them wouldn't be so hateful, because I don't think that's necessarily productive. But it is what it is. I mean, you're not going to have everyone agree with you. You write your column, you throw it out there, you know there's going to be people who are going to vehemently disagree. And, you know, it's just, to me, it's just part of the process. It's part of what you buy into. It's part of what you do.
Do you think that it's primarily because you're a woman writing these things, or is it just the topics that you're choosing, or is it some of all of that?
The commenters that I see, I don't think it really matters that I'm a woman at this point, because I'm doing a political commentary, and so it's about the politics for the most part. I don't know how to quite express this, but I've never been a reporter. I've never been in the trenches like Jill has or like Lorelei has. I started right in as a columnist. And so from my experience, which has been sitting at home and hitting a button that says send on a column every week and not being in a newsroom, and I haven't really experienced a lot of what's being discussed here. And I've never honestly felt that I was being held back by others for being a woman, as much as initially, at least, I was holding myself back based on the way I was raised and what I had seen and what the expectations had been. So it was a matter of me evolving out of thinking of myself as a woman columnist and just thinking of myself as a columnist.
Right. And Jill, how about for you? Do you read the comments? Are they instructive at times? I mean, do you get good ideas from people or is it a lot of noise?
Yeah, sometimes. I just want to get back to something Elise said. And, you know, this idea of being a woman columnist, I really think that all of us strive just to be a columnist, to be writers, to be understood, accepted, and to write well, right? I mean, that's the ultimate goal. You don't want some descriptor in front of it. But I think that there are legitimate challenges in being a woman in this business, in this day and age, trying to find your voice and place. As for comments, I've had both experiences that Lorelei and Elise have expressed here. I try not to look at them because a lot of times they do break down into these kind of nonsense conversations, and I question whether people have even read the piece or read the analysis, and they just start going off, in kind of directions that are not helpful or instructive. I find that it's my belief that kind of the troll commenters are more apt to take personal hits at female writers than they would at male writers and insult your intelligence or, you know, insult your parenting or your motherhood or whatever personal thing you've written about. Ideally, I yearn for this civil discourse that is polite and educated and intelligent and leads to people thinking, not necessarily everybody being on the same page, but being able to engage with one another and kind of raise and elevate the bar. And the comment section of any story is not the place to be seeking that out. And I learned that lesson over and over and over again. And my last comment will be is that I do think that there is bias in the state of Alaska, and in particular as relates to Alaska Native issues. I mean, any story that is written, whether it's a news story or a column story that involves pretty much any topic, is going to yield a lot of hate-filled commentary. And we have had times at my paper when I was more active where you had to turn off the comment features. And I talked to a lot of Alaska Native leaders who experienced the same thing, and they find those comments very hurtful, and they're striving for how do we have this dialogue? How do we talk about these very real experiences in ways that are respectful and educational? And I don't think the state is quite there yet, although strides have been made.
Well, and I think that's probably a common theme in a lot of places where there's just, it seems like a place for vitriol that people feel like they can spew that at the end of articles or columns in a way that we haven't seen in the past. When you had to actually write a letter into the paper, it took a lot more effort to express.
Sign your real name. Yes. I think that's what happens on with the commenting session, is that they can hide behind some ridiculous acronym that they've come up with or name. And then they feel like that has liberated them to spew forth hate. And Jill, I can so agree with you about the racial overtones of what you sometimes see. You may write a column that you think has nothing to do with the issue of Native versus non-Native in the state, and you'll get just hate-filled racial comments. But again, I think it's the cowards who hide behind the anonymity of the comment section.
Well, let's take a quick call here from Austin in Sandpoint. Hi, Austin.
Hey, Lori. How are you doing?
Good.
Good. I'm calling to ask a question for the guest today about rural broadcasters, native broadcasters, and journalists who are trying to come up. And, you know, it's hard to come up in these areas where you don't have a lot of assistance or, people to train you, especially in small rural communities. Do you have any encouragement or advice for journalists as they're trying to break out into this career, into this profession, without a lot of assistance that you might get if you were at a larger city or a larger media outlet?
Well, that's a great question, and I want to start with Lorelei, but we're going to take a quick break before we do that, and then we'll ask Lorelei to weigh in as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station.
Older Persons Action Group publishes Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide publication for seniors, and is an excellent source of information for families and caregivers. SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Today we're discussing women and changing roles in news and in commentary. Columnists are with us today. Lorelei, you heard the question from Austin and Sam Point about what advice you might have for especially people in rural Alaska. You spent a lot of time working with young people coming in, rotating through the KNOM newsroom. It isn't easy to fill jobs at stations and at papers in rural Alaska. So what advice would you give to Austin and the small community of Sam Point?
Yeah, it isn't easy at all. You know, KNOM had a very non-traditional approach to filling, you know, their staff using volunteers from anywhere, really. So every year we would hire college graduates from all over the country, and we would train them directly. So as we hired them, they came into our newsroom, and for a good month, we were in training on how to be a reporter in rural Alaska. And that's, you know, teaching everything from how to use a board to how to talk to people on the phone, and how to do an interview and how to cut and paste and broadcast. And it was difficult. I mean, it was really difficult. It took a lot of energy to, you know, to take someone in who had never done an interview on the phone before and teach them everything. It was necessary. It's necessary, I think, for KNOM to have a model like that because it can be really hard to find people who, you know, who want to do the work. You know, like I said, it was hard for me to do it because I'm reporting on people who are my family, who are my friends, who are my neighbors. So, I don't know, advice for someone in Sandpoint. I mean, if you're someone who wants to be a reporter in rural Alaska, when you asked the question, I, like, hollered into the phone that was on mute, and I said, go to KNOM Radio, because they have such a fantastic training program. and do a really good job training reporters who, you know, many of them have remained in Alaska.
Yes.
And I'm so proud of the ones who have. We have Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel, Zach Hughes in Anchorage, Ben Matheson, who does data reporting in Anchorage. Just so proud of the work that they do, that they've continued to serve Alaska in a way and work in Alaska and use their talents in Alaska. So go to KNOM.
Get training and then go back to Sandpoint, KSDP. So
and then go back to Sandpoint.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a win-win for everyone.
In our last few minutes here, I just want to get your thoughts about why it's important for women. I believe it's important, but I want your thoughts about why it's important for women to be in newsrooms and also in commentary, in column writing. What changes do you think when women are helping to frame the discussion and the dialogue that may be happening in a community? Elise, let's start with you.
Well, I think the difference, I think what women bring is a different perspective. There's a male perspective and a female perspective. I don't care how much equality you want, there are still going to be two different perspectives. Women are almost inevitably thinking more from a, I don't want to say family perspective because that kind of puts you in a box, but you're coming from a more personal, how is this affecting me and my community? I think men's perspective can sometimes be a little bit more detached in their writing. So I think ultimately both perspectives are valid and both need to be heard. I think when you only hear from male columnists, you're hearing from 50% of the population. Let's hear from the other 50%, and then you get the full picture. You leave women out, you're leaving out half your population, you're not ever going to have the full picture.
And they should be talking about more than polishing the silver.
I have never polished a piece of silver in my life.
Nor
gave it
I.
away, so I wouldn't have to. So, no.
And Jill, your thoughts about why this is important to have women helping to shape the dialogue?
Well, two things. One, Susan Orlean one time said, I believe she was at a Nieman Fellow talk at Harvard or something, but she had mentioned that she believes women can blend in a little bit better, a little more successfully into the background, into the setting, a little less assuming than perhaps male counterparts, and more readily willing to say, hey, I don't know anything about this. Let me just observe and learn, and you show me. And, rightfully or wrongfully, I think that there's probably some truth to that. And I think that that's important to be able to get a perspective that might be a little bit closer to the heart of things. And then I do think that there's still a place for that, like, polish the silverware story. I mean, I hate to say it, but, like, I have, when my daughter was 2 or 3, she got her hands all gooped up with Desitin, and there was a crime spree trail of little handprints all over our couch. And that stuff's impossible to get out. And we got it out, and I thought, oh my gosh, there's a great column in here somewhere. And I haven't written it because for fear of the, silver polishing branding. But, there's humor in it, and it's a real life experience. And it's, I think that people would read it. But.
Yeah, and I shouldn't speak. I don't mean to disparage these ideas
because I
think there's also kind of a resurgence in people, in women being kind of interested in some of these things that for a long time we were so focused on careers and other things. And now, people are buying cookbooks again and wanting to
and
do more
are,
home
People
home
have
things.
Whole lives, full
right,
lives, right?
Exactly.
Like, we're not just writers, we're not just journalists, but we're parents or spouses
yeah.
or, whatever, whoever we are as our whole person in our full life. And I think that all of that has merit, and it can have merit in the writing if, as a columnist, we choose to do so.
Lorelei, let's get Lorelei in here just for a minute because we're just about out of time. Lorelei, a couple, about 20 seconds.
Okay. Well, I just want to say that I guess I've never felt like there was something I couldn't do other than, like, I don't have a lot of upper body strength. We were just down the coast yesterday picking herring eggs off of the rocks down the coast. And here comes Patty Hutta with her huge herring boat and a crew. And there she was being the captain of this boat in this great big ocean. And I was
Fantastic.
Like, she is a huge reason why I just feel like I can do whatever I want.
All right. I love ending on that note.
I'll use my 20 seconds for that.
Yes. Women can do whatever they want. Let's leave on that note. Thank you for listening today. Thanks to our guests, Elise Putkatuk, Jill Burke, and Lorelei Kanin. I'm Lori Townsend. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network by
First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com. Boating accidents happen, even to experienced boaters, and on calm, sunny days. This boating season, make those you care about promise to be rescue ready by always wearing a life jacket when in an open boat or on deck, attaching the engine cutoff device when underway, and carrying emergency communication and distress signaling devices on their person. Visit pledgetolive.org for more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.